Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
Hello, and welcome to a very new episode of your favorite podcast in America. It's Life's a Banquet podcast. It's a show about all things edible, spreadable, horrible, adorable, and horrible with me, your host, Jeff Foxworthy, and
me, Ernest, from Ernest Goes to Camp.
What about from Ernest Scared Stupid?
I've never seen that.
Oh, that's a crime, because Ernest Scared Stupid did actually scare me stupid.
For whatever reason, this just like happened. We had free HBO that we like stole, or we got free HBO because sometimes you could just get it for free for a week or something.
Sure,
but
yes.
It just like stuck around, and so there were like shows that were just playing constantly on HBO, and I just like as a child of the 80s just sat inside and watched TV all the time. So Ernest Goes to Camp was on. I've seen that movie like 50 times. I've seen it so many times.
Me too, and I do know what you mean, Vern.
Yeah, do you know what I mean, Vern? And Ernest, you know, underrated, may he rest in peace, greatest actor of all time.
And the award for best actor goes to Ernest. What was that man's name? No, he wasn't named Vern.
I always forget his real name.
I guess we'll never know. We won't ever be able to look it up. We'll have to go to the library later. Ernest
but
goes
hopefully
stupid.
He'll get the nominations that come out for the regular Oscars, which I haven't looked at, but hopefully Ernest will get his Lifetime Achievement Award this year.
Yeah, they're going to ignore all the other dead celebrities. Ernest Scared Stupid was the scariest movie I'd ever seen for a while because I was so scared of everything when I was a kid. And there was like giant trolls in it that were covered in slime and I really couldn't handle it. But I watched it over and over.
Huh, I don't like slime.
Well, you will not care for this movie at all.
Okay, then I won't watch it then.
Okay, great. And, you know, it's interesting because as I mentioned last week, I'm currently and have been for about 6 years now renting a troll doll's apartment in the Navy Yard, aka a storage unit full of troll dolls. And so I have these two really interesting sides of my personality, one pro-troll, the other anti-troll. And here I ended up now at this point in my life with almost no trolls at all.
I think that you should sell them.
I know, but you're right. I should sell them. The thing is that getting the shit out of your storage unit and moving it is like so much more complicated than it like looks on paper. It takes like a lot of time. I don't know. In the past 6 years, I haven't been able to find the time.
Well, as you were just telling a friend of ours, you know, don't stay in your apartment just because it seems too difficult or expensive to move. It's better for your mental health to just get those trolls out of there.
That's a good point. I mean, God knows what's happened to them. At this point, they may have all just like melted together.
I don't know. Do you not have a temperature controlled unit?
I think I do. I have a pretty sexy unit. That's not the first time I've said that. Am I right, ladies?
Is there like a hot tub in there? That would be cool.
Yeah, they're chilling in there. They're having a great time. I gave them a little hot tub. They have a tiny troll's kitchen.
I was just thinking? I just had a great idea.
Sure.
Like a brilliant plan. So you know how like really stupid new build apartments have like those lobbies where there's like foosball and like a bar and like no one's ever in there like hanging out with their neighbors because everyone hates their neighbors. We should have one of those in a storage unit. So then you can like go get your storage shit and then or, you know, go put a dead body in there or whatever you got to do and then go hang out with other people that also have not enough room in their apartments.
That's a great idea.
You have so much in common already.
Yes. That's very true. Like, you have 700 troll dolls as well. Are you single?
Right. And, like, do you want to get in this hot tub?
Yeah. Of course I'm not single.
do you want to get on this Christian Mingle website with me?
Have you ever Christian mingled?
Well, I used to go to youth group.
Oh, interesting.
So technically, yes.
Huh. What is youth group?
It's where you, like, take the youth of your church and make them hang out on non-church days so that they don't become corrupted by Metallica or whatever.
Oh, right. Do you do, like, sex and stuff there? Does it get wild, like summer camp?
No, you don't do sex.
Fingering?
Because you're in church. I guess some people probably fingered. I was a good Christ-believing youth group goer, so I just was like, yeah, let's listen to this acoustic guitar. Or let's go fucking, I don't even know what the hell we used to do. We
canoeing?
Just like hang out at church and like read Bible verses, I guess. I don't really know.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ,
drink
literally.
Root beer.
Well, that's one up. That's one positive part. Root beer is delicious and it's hard to find it free.
That's true. Yeah. The free root beer element is, I think, not talked about often enough. And I think that if you can pass as a youth, you should try to go find yourself a little youth group and get some free root beer.
That's a great point. Now, here's the real million-dollar question, Nicole, and I feel like I know how you're going to answer this already, but are you a Barks or are you a A&W?
So interestingly, first of all, it's weird that those are your two root beer choices.
What are the other choices? Just, Stewart's?
There's a million choices, but I just had this conversation with my group chat about everyone's favorite root beer, and Barks has caffeine.
Does it? That explains why I was such an insane child.
Barks has bite was their old like tagline. Maybe it's the same now. Okay. But so they're the only root beer that has, well, maybe not the only one, but that one had caffeine. But I do like their label. Like, I think their can is very cute. But I like, you know, yes, I don't really drink a lot of root beer. I like Dr. Brown's root beer.
Oh, wow. Fringe.
There's also... on my friend's group chat, there were like a bunch of root beers that I, cause there's also, damn it. Now I can't remember it.
Hold Life's on, a Banquet, the show where two middle-aged women try to remember brands of root beer to no avail. You know what I think is disgusting and a clear red flag? And I say this as a person who likes celery and as a Jew, the fucking Dr. Brown's celery soda. It should be illegal.
I don't like that. I don't like celery, so
I know you
for
don't
me,
like celery.
It's a big hell no.
I love celery, but I can't understand for the life of me. Somebody, if there's a celery soda lover out there, first of all, don't come too close to me because I'm afraid of you. Secondly, call me or like text me, whatever, write something in the air on a plane and tell me what the fuck your problem is. Why do you like this flavor of soda? It makes no sense.
Okay, so there's also Dad's Root Beer. Do you know that one?
Yeah, Dad's Root Beer is nice. That's good root beer.
And then there's also, I do like A&W, but there's also one called Frost Top, which I've never heard of.
Whoa, Frost Top Root Beer, call me.
I think it's like a West Coast thing.
That's chill.
And then there's also Mug Root Beer.
Oh, Mug Root Beer, of course. How can we forget Mug in a frosted mug? A mug of root beer instead of regular beer?
Yeah.
Mug
root beer,
nice.
I think, I feel like when I was a kid, I guess A&W and Barks were the two competing root beers.
Yeah, that reminds me very much of my childhood. We were a Barks home at my dad's house and at my mom's, who didn't drink any kind of soda, but she let me basically have whatever I wanted. For some reason, her acquiescence to soda, which I think she thought was like the top criminal food item, was caffeine-free Coca-Cola in the gold can.
My mom used to drink caffeine-free Diet Coke, which is the grossest Coca-Cola that there is.
Yeah, it makes no sense. I mean,
it's
I understand
flat.
Diet Coke. Yeah, it's flat. It's sketchy. It's not cool. Stay away from it.
Yeah, but they didn't have like diet root beer back then, so you just had, that's what you had to do.
Sure, sure.
If you didn't want the caffeine, but you still wanted a soda.
Yeah, life was very hard during those times, during the turn of the century when we grew up.
Yes, very.
It literally
time.
Was the turn of the century. Isn't that weird to think about?
Yes, one of the turns of the century.
Well, there's been a lot of centuries, but it was a turn of the century. It was a changing
the
of the seasons.
Turns.
So what's going on with you? How are you? Did you get your hair done yet? No, that's tomorrow, huh?
That's Thursday. Don't jinx me. Because I'm already jinxed because level one stylist is going to be doing my hair. Who knows how well she'll be able to do it.
Wow.
My like level three. So apparently stylists, you know, beginners are level one and my stylist is a level three, whatever the hell that means. I don't know how high the levels go, but, the person who's doing me is like a beginner. And so my current stylist had to go explain to her what my hair was like because she's going on vacation. And so I have no idea what to expect when I get in there. But a newborn baby is going to be dyeing my hair. What could go wrong?
I mean, nothing. It's going to be fine. And if all your hair crumbles off, then you'll do a cool, like, tank girl look with a bald head and, like, long bangs or something.
I mean, I don't – honestly, my greatest fear is not that my hair would be so damaged that it would have to be cut short because I think that I would be fine with that, but that the color would be bad. That's the greatest fear.
Right. Well, you could still do the same thing. You could still cut it short.
Well, the color would still be on there, though, so I don't really know.
You can buzz it off.
Do.
Strip it all off.
I could shave my head, yes. That's Wax always up. An option for all people.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's see what happens. We can't wait for an update on this. Personally, I'm waiting with breath. That is baited. What else
Jason
is
Jason Bateman.
Yes, my favorite actor, Jason Bateman.
what else is new? Let's see. I went rock climbing, wall bouldering, like people do in the movies. It was hard, and now my arms still hurt really, really bad, and like my lats hurt. You know those old muscles?
Yes, they're very unpopular. But you know what? When you told me yesterday that you went rock climbing, I have to be honest, I felt like I have like maybe lost you forever.
Yeah, well, in Indiana, you just have to kind of try to find activities that are not. We were trying to have a non-drinking activity with one of our friends who's sober, and so,
no, it's very sweet.
That was it. Although they do actually serve alcohol at this rock climbing gym.
Silly. You can just take drinks. You can just take the drink before you climb the rocks.
Yeah, you can take the drink, have a mimosa, and then climb up some scary rocks.
Wow, that's very interesting.
But there wasn't, we weren't actually allowed to access the cafe because there was a private drag brunch going on. And then all of the drag queens came out and started sort of fake bouldering for photo ops, and that was pretty fun.
That's so fun. A drag queen boulder climbing event in the middle mm-hmm. of a Monday? That sounds wonderful. I'm jealous of you.
Well, it was Sunday. The Lord
in the middle of a Sunday? That sounds wonderful. I'm jealous of you.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I suck at rock climbing as all, well, maybe not all beginners, as beginners with weak arms like I do have.
Amazing. Nicole, we've been getting a lot of feedback from last week's episode spectacular, Bonanza, about Bennifer. And most of the feedback has been coming through in the form of a reaction to the video we posted about Casey Affleck doing a Dunkin' Donuts commercial, which is so funny. And you just watched it yesterday for the first time. What are your thoughts and feelings?
I love it. I love that he's smoking outside of the Dunkin', but also in the Dunkin'. Even though Casey Affleck is canceled, I'm pretty sure, I still was able to enjoy it, despite that fact.
It's very funny. And, like, Mary and Catherine were both saying that, like, as people from Long Island, like, that's, like, obviously a New England guy, Massachusetts guy or whatever, but it's not all too different than, like, the Long Island guy that's, like, very similar except a slightly different accent.
Right.
But they're like, is it weird that I like find him more attractive as this guy? I'm like, no, I kind of do too, actually.
Yeah, we all have a crush on that guy who beats up his coworker and throws him into a Dunkin' Donuts display.
Just our upbringing. I'm just saying, you know, we weren't necessarily raised right, but that's okay. But anyway, very funny. Thank you all for tuning in. I know it was a very special day. How can we ever live up to it? In fact, I actually considered, I'm like, should we not even talk about Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez anymore after this? Like, maybe we've done it. We need to move on to a different celebrity couple, like, you know, Meg Ryan and John Cougar Mellencamp.
Oh, yeah, we should actually that. Well, they're broken up many years now, but that has never stopped us before. Spoiler alert, John Cougar Mellencamp and Meg Ryan broke up 5 years ago.
I didn't know that. How could this be? Also, were you the one who was telling me that, like, John Cougar Mellencamp was like, nah, dog, like, I don't want to be, like, Cougar anything. I'm just John Mellencamp. And the record label was like, no, you're John Cougar Mellencamp now. Like, you're a Cougar. Like, be about it. And he was like, no. And they're like, yes. And they won.
That, I did not know that, even though he is from my home state. And even though every time we go to the lake with my parents, we drive by his mansion in Bloomington. Didn't really? Know that. But I also got some feedback about our last episode. And it's sucked. That the person that we were arguing about the entire time was actually Roy Scheider, not Roy Schneider.
I knew it. I told you it but was Roy something is, different is also, than what I said.
Okay, but Roy Schneider is not a person that exists.
Roy Schneider?
Roy Scheider is on Jaws.
Yeah, I know. So I'm saying Roy Schneider. There, I mean, he doesn't exist in our conversation. I'm sure there's like millions, oh, thousands at least of Roy Schneiders in the world. Just they weren't in Jaws.
Right. Yes. But there aren't. Yeah. But the actor that you were saying is not the actor that I was saying either. It was a non whatever. But
I was talking about Liev Schreiber.
No, you weren't.
Yes. He's really much older than he appears. He's in his 90s now. Look it up. See if I care.
But I do want to say I do have some more Bennifer news to update us.
All right, fine. What's up?
Why did you make that sound?
I don't know. I guess I thought we were through with this, but it's fine. I'm excited to hear what you have to say. I'm just fronting sure. I don't care. I do care.
Yeah, okay. Well, it doesn't matter to me if you care or not. I'm never going to stop talking about Bennifer, my true passion. Jennifer Aniston and Ben Affleck.
And the Fleck.
So J-Lo said that the reason Bennifer broke up in the early 2000s is because public scrutiny drove them apart. And wow. Part of the public scrutiny involved her being called a mean bitch all the time.
Oh, yeah. That has got to be a thorn in your side. Who said that about her, that she was a mean
everyone,
bitch?
Everyone, apparently. But I'm like, if everyone's calling you a mean bitch, I'm like, maybe you are a mean bitch at work.
Everyone can't be wrong, right? Like, if, like, yeah. You end up in fights with all your friends and family and stuff, like, and you're just like, everyone around me just sucks. You have to, at some point, be like, maybe it's me. You know?
Yeah.
It's got to be.
Could it be me? Take a look at the man in the mirror. So, yeah, she's like, basically, the media scrutiny ripped us apart. And now that we're together and we're both a lot more rich, we're not going to let that happen again.
Right, because they can just have anyone killed that says anything mean about them.
Yeah, they can control the media. So for all of you people that were like wondering if the current scrutiny, which is happening only from this one podcast, is going to tear them apart, the answer is no, they're going to stick it out. So don't worry, okay? Don't worry that our constant paparazzi chasing of them is going to harm the relationship, because it won't, okay?
That's what
so everyone, relax.
That's what you don't know about Nicole and I, is that we, like, stalkerazzi them. Even though that's very much out of fashion, it's very 90s, 2000s. People don't really stalkerazzi quite as much as they used to. We do, still. I spend a lot of money flying back and forth to Los Angeles. You have no idea.
I moved to Los Angeles to be able to, like, find where they're, because they're supposed to be like house hunting out there, right? Like, how do you think I figured that out?
And you're Bennifer hunting while they're house hunting. So the hunters have become the hunted.
Yes, exactly.
The student becomes the teacher.
They're my hunties and I'm the hunter.
This is a most dangerous game.
And this is Helen Hunt, host of The Hunties.
Helen Hunt and Hunter S. Thompson join together for a new podcast in which they hunt Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez. It's called Hunting for Bennifer.
Oh, dear God.
Is Hunter S. Thompson still with us?
No, he blew his head off.
Oh, right. That's right. I couldn't remember. Too many people have died for me to keep track, to be honest, at this point. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like he died like 400 years ago.
Probably. I forgot for a minute. So I phoned a friend. So sue me. He can't be on the podcast. I guess we'll have to call another Hunter.
Like Hunter Biden?
Yes, exactly. Hunter Biden, America's favorite first son. Second only to Eric Trump.
America's favorite coke addict.
Famous coke addict. And wife stealer. Okay, anyway. So should we get into our topic today?
Yes, because otherwise we're just going to be talking about this forever and no one will listen.
Yeah, all our Hunter Biden enthusiasts fans are going to tune right out. So, guys, today's episode, it's fluffy, it's moist, it's sticky and sweet. That's right, we're talking about my butt.
Yuck.
We're talking about cake.
I have a better intro for it.
Go ahead.
It's like, okay, as we gear up for the Super Bowl, there's only one thing on everybody's mind. It's cake.
How about this? As we gear up for this year's Super Bowl, there's only one thing on people's minds. That's right. It's my butt. A mashup of the two.
No, that doesn't work. How about this one? As we gear up for the Super Bowl, there's only one thing on everybody's mind. How do I make a cake shaped like a football?
As we gear up for this year's Super Bowl, there's only one thing on everybody's mind. How do I score me a ticket to the Puppy Bowl?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Okay, that's one more.
Okay, fine.
Also, Arwen, you're going to have to cut all these out. As we gear up for the Super Bowl, there's only one thing on everybody's mind. And that is, how do I make a cake shaped like Tom Brady, who's retiring this year?
It's easy. You just get one of those big, giant penis-shaped cake molds and do it that way. Start there.
Yeah. And the answer is, we're not going to tell you, because I'm not talking about Super Bowl cakes. I'm just talking about box cake and how it became a thing that we all know and love.
Okay, great.
So let's go back in time a little bit here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the year 1837. Everything's great. I'm thinking the Industrial Revolution is, like, happening probably. I don't really know when that started, but we've talked enough about it on this podcast that you should be able to figure it out on your own. You should be taking notes every episode. So 1837, Alfred Bird made Bird's custard powder, which is basically a custard powder that you add water to and make a little custard out of, which sounds gross. It's cornflour powder also. So I'm just like, are you even supposed to eat cornflour powder? I don't know. But
not straight. You're supposed to sniff it.
Alfred Bird was like, listen, here's some custard, add some water, you're in business. And everyone was like, thank you, Alfred. And then in 1889, Pearl Milling Company made pancake mix for the very first time. And they made it out of hard winter wheat, corn flour again, America's favorite flour, boiler water treated phosphates. No idea what that means.
Whoa, that doesn't sound good.
What is boiler water? Does that just mean water?
I think it's what it sounds
hot?
Like. I think it's water from your boiler that heats your house.
I don't think that the milling company was going to different people's houses to get their boiler water. I just think it's like hot water, but I don't know why
that's
they had to describe it.
Boiling water.
Yeah, no idea. Maybe it's boiling water, but it said boiler water.
This sounds like a case for America's favorite detective, Rob Schneider.
Also, the sentence, boiling water treated phosphate, still doesn't make any sense. So who the hell knows? There's also some baking soda in there and salt. And they decided to name their pancake mix Aunt Jemima, which now we are all like cringe. But it was 1889. So I guess they thought it was okay.
Not fully 1889.
In 1920, Mr. McCollum, I don't know what his first name is. I guess I just wrote it as, maybe his first name is Mr. He made the first corn muffin mix in a box and also pie crust mix, which I'm like, what?
How confusing is that, huh?
Did that entail? I'm curious. I don't know. We'll never know.
Like pie crust mix, like really, right? Pie crust is just butter and flour. So was it just flour?
Yeah, it's just a box.
A little box of flour with this man's stupid face on it.
Add your own butter and roll it out a whole bunch of times and pray. I have no idea. Maybe it was like, you know, a no-bake pie. I have no idea what this guy was doing. Maybe it was a corn-based pie crust.
Get the fuck out of here, corn.
I don't know.
Okay.
All right. This isn't a research podcast. If you want to do research, you have to do it on your own.
Fair enough.
So these are basically the precursors to box cake mix, according to Cooks Illustrated, who may or may not be trusted. But the original box of cake was invented during the Depression. So there's this John D. Duff of the P. Duff and Sons Company, which was like a molasses company, was like, holy shit, we have way too much molasses. We need to figure out something to do with this extra molasses. I don't understand why a molasses company would have excess molasses. Like, I thought maybe it was a byproduct of something else they were making, but they just made molasses, and I guess they were making too much of it.
Yes, they were. Did you ever hear about that awful tragedy that happened where like a molasses like water tank basically like burst and took out like an entire town and killed like 100 people?
Yeah, I think we talked about it on this podcast.
Maybe. Okay. Maybe we did, but it's terrible. Molasses is inherently evil. We all know that.
Well, maybe on the heels of that molasses disaster, they were like, we can't keep molasses in tanks. We got to get rid of it ASAP. Yeah. And so what he did was he dehydrated his molasses. I don't know how he did that, but maybe he just like put it out in the sun. I have no idea if there were dehydrating technologies available in the 1930s. I guess there must have been.
How interesting.
What were they? So he dehydrated the molasses, mixed it with flour, sugar, and also dried egg. Everything was very dry during the Depression because of the Dust Bowl.
Sure.
So yeah, they had to dry the egg.
That's the answer of why.
It was kind of like a popular trend that was happening.
Dryness.
Everything should be dry. Dry, dry, dry.
It's nice, but make it drier.
Yeah, if you take this egg, is it possible we can make this egg less wet and a little bit more dry? And John D. Duff was like, you bet your ass I can. So he dried up an egg. He dried up some molasses. He whipped up some flour, which is notoriously, famously already dry. And and then he put it all together and he basically made gingerbread in a box. You just had to add water to it. And this is a sentence that I have to quote directly from Cooks Illustrated. They claim that during the Depression, families were looking for a simple, inexpensive way to enjoy cake. So, like,
that's what they were looking for.
Not to, like, survive.
Or get back to work, pay their rent. Or, like,
be photographed by Dorothea Lange. They they're trying to figure out a way to have cake, but on the cheap.
Yeah.
And dry.
In a dry way. That was the original Dry January.
The goal was to remove all wetness from the home.
I just did a spit take back into a bottle with a very small spout. There's water everywhere, all over my face and all over my floor.
And, you know, also dry skin was very popular at the time. Like everything dry. You know, dry shampoo,
dry
everything
fry,
should be dry.
Dry fly fishing.
Yeah.
Dry cleaning.
Dry cleaning was huge at this time.
Driving, Miss Daisy.
Dry goods, really cool, really big. So yeah, everyone was like, oh my God, I'm so freaking starving. I'm going to eat this old potato. And also, please, can I have some gingerbread cake? okay. So then, you know, everybody's having some gingerbread, you know, everyone is saved. And then we have World War II comes along and it's like, oh my God, you guys, we have to get a war going on. And so the flour companies are like, okay, well, what we're going to do is figure out ways to like make stuff dry because they're flour companies, you know, so everything's pretty dry already.
We got the whole dryness thing unlocked.
We want it to be like legit dry so we can send it over to the troops. So the flour companies were making kind of like little mixes, powdered mixes to send over to the troops that can be rehydrated. Mm-hmm. And so when World War II was over, they already kind of had the technology to move into making cake mix, essentially. So they're like, okay, what can we do with all this dry shit that is usable for the busy, pesky consumers that we have now that, you know, we're having some sort of financial boom.
The cake-obsessed
public. Yes, people, like, they are passionate about cake, and we know that from when they would only eat gingerbread during the Depression.
We love cake, but we just can't figure out how to make it.
Yeah, just like, what? How? Too many ingredients. Please help us, oh Lord. So, yeah, the busy consumer who, like, doesn't have time to mix two dry ingredients together, which is really all the time that you're saving from buying a box cake, for the record.
Totally.
So Betty Crocker, that fake ass bitch who is not a real person, in case you don't remember from us talking about it, in 1947 was like, everyone, hello, here's a box cake mix. And then in 1948, Pillsbury was like, well, guess what, bitches? We're going to make the first ever chocolate cake mix.
Oh, shit.
And the crowds went wild. And then 3 years later, Duncan Hines finally rolls up and was like, okay, fine, we'll do it too. So then, you know, you have the three big contenders for box cake mix.
So interesting. And just a little sidebar from an episode from way, 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 way back in the day. I think when Breton was still a co-host here, when he was still alive. We did the story of Duncan Hines. I did the story of Duncan Hines, and he started off as America's first food critic.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Duncan Hines is like, I'm critical of a cake mix, but I can't lose out on this cash cow. But then in the mid 50s, oh wait, sorry. So a couple things happened in the 40s during this cake box craze is that the original ones had dried eggs.
Ew.
But really dried stuff was sort of falling out of fashion. So people are like, enough with the Dust Bowl. We are back into wetness. So the cake companies were like, okay, we figure out a way to make box cake where you can add fresh eggs to it. Because they found that, like, women or people making these box cake mixes wanted to, like, pretend like they're actually doing something and not just pouring it in and adding water.
Sure.
However, what they found is that even though in the surveys the people would say that they would prefer to buy the ones where you add eggs to it, they actually bought the ones with the dried eggs in there. So,
like people with the 2016 election.
Yeah.
No, I would never vote for Trump or use powdered eggs. They're the same people, literally, yeah. Because it was a bunch of old people.
That is true. Yeah, they were definitely making cakes in 1947 and then totally voting for Donald Trump and lying about it. And so, yeah, basically, even though people were buying more of the dried egg mix, they eventually were phased out, and all of them required fresh eggs. However, in the mid-50s, box cake sales were flattening.
Really?
And they were freaking out. Everyone's freaking out. Mr. Hines is freaking out. Mrs. Crocker's freaking out. And then the Pillsbury Doughboy is freaking out.
You do not want to see him angry, as we learned in Ghostbusters.
Because the box cake sales are flattened, and I guess at that time they weren't really selling any other product. I don't know what else they would have had back then. But so General Mills hired a psychologist and a marketing specialist, just like in Mad Men, where they have that psychologist lady come in.
Oh, yes, Dr. Miller.
And then Don Draper, like, bones her and then leaves her for Megan, spoiler alert.
After spending one weekend with Megan, he dumps this hot doctor and is like, I want to marry Megan. I'm in love with you. And we're all like, Don. Oh, Don. Classic Don.
Yeah, I have a friend who stopped watching the show after that episode.
Really? What kind of friend is this?
Kelly Allen. She was like, I just couldn't. I was so sick of Don Draper's antics that I was like, screw you, Don. I'm not going to watch anymore.
Huh.
And Don was like, I don't care. I'm still getting paid whether you watch or not. General Mills hired a psychologist named Ernest, full circle.
Oh my goodness.
Ernest Dichter.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. That's my name too.
He surveyed women to see why they stopped feverishly buying box cake.
They're like, suck it, Dichter. Leave us alone.
According to Dichter, the women were like, well, dude, you know what? As a 1950s housewife, I don't feel like I'm contributing enough to my household by taking sole care of the entire labor of the entire home's cleanliness and all the 75 children that we have.
And putting up with my husband fucking anything that walks past him and getting fucking wasted every night. Or even putting up with
him fucking me. Sure. So I just feel guilty because if I don't make the cake from scratch, I'm not contributing enough to my household. And sure. The companies were like, ladies, don't worry about it. The box cake is just step one in the process. Where you get to come in and really shine is putting frosting on top.
Ugh, it's not a cake without frosting. It's just a pile of dry and wet.
I know. So also, like, were they, prior to this time, just having box cake with no frosting? Seems bizarre.
That's very interesting. Yeah, what the hell were they doing? Maybe whipped cream. That's a lazy cake. But it's also delicious.
Cool Whip, maybe. Sure. I love a Cool Whip. So this became a whole fucking thing where they had these elaborate like magazine spreads where they show women how to like literally decorate a cake like a football field. I'm not even kidding. For the Super Bowl.
Coming true.
They had step-by-step instructions for women to bake their own wedding cakes using box cake and these elaborate like decoration things.
That's cool. That's a cruel thing to make somebody do. Unless they really want to.
I know. I mean, but also if you want to bake your own wedding cake, go for it. I don't give a shit.
Sure.
But why pay $1 million when you can do it for 10?
I just think of someone making their own wedding cake all alone. I guess we want to do it with friends or like your partner, it seems, or your parent. It seems a little bit less sad. Just sitting home alone, baking your whole own wedding cake for, 300 people. Where do we even put it?
Well, I don't even know 300 people. So I don't really know. I mean, don't you just bake like a million circles of cake and then
stack them to the moon? Well, maybe.
I mean, it doesn't have to be like 10 feet tall.
You can make it more wide than tall is what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You can make it like you can have a football field wedding cake if you want.
Right. That's actually decorated like a football field and the size of a football field.
Also. A literal football field. you can get in the Guinness Book of World Records, the coveted place where brides always want to show up. So anyway, this fucking trick worked because women are dumb.
Yeah, you can say that again.
I'm just kidding. I don't really know why this worked, but it's interesting to me because in my research, which is deeply involved and took weeks and weeks, it didn't say whether or not this also coincided with those companies making their own frosting or if these women were using box cake mix and then going through the process of making frosting, which is like more labor intensive.
Absolutely. I find making frosting to be very frustrating sometimes. I mean, it's usually fairly easy.
It's frustrating.
That's what I was trying to say, frustrating. like Martin Short and Father of the Bride.
It's like Nixon versus frustrating.
Yes, exactly. Frost Nixon. Another compelling presidential drama featuring America's favorite cottage cheese nibbler, Richard Nixon. But anyway, yeah, frosting can be, it's very messy sometimes. And then you end up tasting a lot of it. So you're like, going to diabetic shock. It's better left to the professionals.
Yeah, I agree. But I actually do like canned frosting or whatever they call it.
Do you remember I remember like sleepovers when I was a kid and a teen, like, would revolve around getting a lot of 90s junk food. And one thing that was always like, it was like cookie dough from the package and like a can of frosting just to like eat with cookies.
Yeah, there is something very like waxy flavored about that frosting. Mm-hmm. I had some recently. But also definitely go to town on box cake and box frosting for sure.
Well, it's like the first scene in Death Becomes Her.
Where she has a her whole cabinet is just filled with jars of frosting
and she just keeps ripping open cans of frosting and eating them with a knife. That's really stuck with me. It was like really burned in my brain.
Yeah, that shit, we've all been there. And then to sort of tie this all in a bow, I found in my research that in 1989 or 1988, it's not totally clear, Pillsbury invented Funfetti cake and they own that trademark. So even though Funfetti has become sort of like the word Kleenex to refer to all sprinkly cakes, Funfetti is owned by Pillsbury, which I think is hilarious. And then I found an article entitled Funfetti Explosion, from the 2016 Failing New York Times by Julia Moskin. And she went through how, because we all probably remember this, when literally funfetti was everywhere, that milk bar fucking cake, and it just, like, you couldn't escape the sprinkles. And I had sort of forgotten about that period of time. And it also talks about that restaurant in Greenpoint called Hail Mary. Do you remember that place?
Yes, they made their own fucking sprinkles, which I thought
they
was
made
so
their
insane.
Own sprinkles, like a bunch of psychopaths.
That's too much. And no offense to them. And I completely understand the vibe of, like, wanting to make everything in-house. But there comes a point when, unless you're like an actual bakery and you have a restaurant in New York City with sky high rent, you simply cannot afford to make your own sprinkles. It's not worth it.
And that's why they failed.
Yeah. They needed a Hail Mary. Sorry, guys, if you're listening.
And that restaurant was so cute inside. They had little cute wallpaper.
That's a hard spot, though, over there.
Yeah, it's a weird area.
We used to have a delicious birthday cake on the menu at Brucey. And I guess it was a little on trend, but I feel like we did it maybe after the trend, even to the point where, like, people had forgotten about it and it was just, like, birthday cake again.
Well, I don't know. That stupid milk bar cake fucking permeated the psyche of America.
That's true. I do love vanilla birthday cake with rainbow sprinkles, though. It is so fucking delicious.
I love fun. I would still buy. I miss the funfetti frosting that you can't buy anymore. It had, like, white frosting and little teeny tiny, allegedly, like, chocolate chips, but they were brightly colored. But they mostly just tasted like candle wax.
Yes, they were wax. They were candle wax. You could use it to illuminate your house if the power went out.
And if you have a power outage. Yeah. Box cake is still thriving. 186 million Americans used box cake in 2020. No one mentioned if that is because we ran out of flour in 2020 because of the pandemic, or if that had been a national trend that was just continuing. Because I was like, well, did 186 million people actually use cake, box cake in 2020 for real? Or is it because we all ran out of flour?
Like, that's very interesting. Yes, very interesting. What a story.
Yeah, great story. And that's all I have.
I love it. All right, cool. Should we take a quick break?
Yeah.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. Roth has made specialty cheese in the rolling hills of Wisconsin for more than 30 years. With strong Swiss heritage, Roth is best known for its award-winning Alpine-style Grand Cru cheeses. Fresh Wisconsin milk, combined with expertise in affinage, is how Roth creates high-quality, great-tasting cheese year after year. In 2016, hard work paid off when out of over 2,000 contenders, Roth Grand Cru Sir Choix was named world champion at the World Cheese Championship. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
And we're back. And guess what, folks? We are going to leave you today with a motherfucking cliffhanger. That's right. Sylvester Stallone style. And you know what? He is a huge cake enthusiast, too, as you'll find out next week. Just kidding. I'm going to do my story next week, which I'm going to leave as a teaser. I'm not going to tell you exactly what it is, but it's going to be hot and sexy. I can promise you that. Nicole, do you want to talk a little bit about your favorite cakes? Maybe let's say even your top three favorite cakes?
Sure. Yeah. I'm going to just delve in here. So basically, well, as I don't know if this was obvious from earlier, but my favorite cake is cake that is football themed. I'm just kidding.
Get the fuck out of here.
I know. I love funfetti cake.
I'm just kidding. I mean, Joe Montana. Joe Montana is the guy from Empire Records. Am I right?
I don't even know if we should debate another actor name at this point. Now we've been humiliated by Roy Schneider or Ray Shriver.
Ray Romano. Okay.
Ray Liotta. Yeah, I'm a big vanilla person. I'm very vanilla in all ways. But I like vanilla cake with vanilla frosting.
That
Magnolia fucking cupcake with the vanilla frosting and the vanilla cake. I'm here for it. Even now, 40 years later.
That's very good cake. I agree with you.
And also, I like a yellow cake.
Me too.
I like a yellow cake with traditionally, according to the picture on the box, you're supposed to put chocolate frosting on it. But I fucking put vanilla frosting on there because there are no rules.
That's true. That's nice. That's good cake. I like that.
And then, so I actually have more than three. I'm sorry to tell you.
Please.
I really like spice cake a lot. My dad loves spice cake. Mm. I love a delicious spice cake. It's just freaking good. My grandpa loved spice cake. My grandma would get this box spice cake. And then also there was like a spice frosting flavor in the 80s and 90s. It was like kind of grayish brown. Like not the cutest color, but like delicious. Like I guess probably like a cinnamon frosting of some kind. I have no idea. And then also recently my little nephew was like, yo bitches, I want strawberry cake with strawberry frosting. And I was like, what the
fuck?
Good. And they have that at the store. They have a strawberry, like Duncan Hines cake with strawberry frosting. And it tasted a little bit obviously fake, but, damn, it was delicious.
It's very good. I made that cake from scratch a couple years ago using, dried dehydrated strawberries, and it makes a really nice, you can just make like a strawberry buttercream like you would a vanilla buttercream, but if you add the dehydrated strawberries to it, it doesn't add any like additional liquid or whatever.
Yeah, and also if you just use regular strawberries, even if they've been like macerated, it's difficult to, and then the flavor doesn't really come through very strongly, because I tried to make a cake over the summer when I was still living with my parents, and it ended up being like a snacking cake, you know, like a quick bread almost. But it wasn't, the cake itself wasn't very strawberry-y. There was just like the strawberry puree just kind of barely was there. Mm. You need the fake strawberry or the dehydrated strawberry.
Yes, dehydrated strawberry is a good one. Ooh, yeah, that strawberry cake with strawberry frosting is so good. Love it. Okay, is it my turn? I'm excited.
Well, I do want to put a small shout out to also a lemon cake, which I adore.
Love a lemon cake. A lemon olive oil cake. I've recently been making a lemon olive for the pop-up, like a lemon olive oil cake that has little lemon lavender crunchies on the bottom of like our cup, because we serve our desserts in cups. So the bottom has like lemon lavender crunchies, then there's the lemon olive oil cake, and then lemon curd, and then fresh whipped cream on top.
That sounds delicious. Oh, I also like a coconut cake.
Yes.
You remember the place in Carroll Gardens? I don't know if it's still there. The adorable little, like, basically there was like a little pastry shop.
Where?
Like the light, like the Robin's Egg blue walls, and they had a really delicious coconut
cake. Yeah, the one girl
cookie.
Yeah
And one time I got a piece of coconut cake from there and went to the movie theater around the corner and ate it there.
That's a wonderful 1-2 punch. It makes me want to get some coconut cake. I love coconut cake too. That was going to be my number three. I love a chocolate cake, like a dark chocolate cake with chocolate frosting, or maybe even more like a devil's food cake. So like a dark, really yummy chocolate cake, like fluffy, moist chocolate cake with vanilla frosting or even cream cheese frosting. And then my number one cake has got to be forever and always a good carrot cake, not some swaggy fucking carrot cake. We recently had some carrot cake, which God bless it, it was less than delicious. I like chucked it into the garbage when no one was looking.
Yeah, recently at work, I was like, hey guys, do you want to see a dessert menu? And the guy was like, do you have carrot cake? And
what
I was
like, fuck? That's crazy. Laughed. Who does that?
I just laughed. I was like, no.
Do you have carrot cake? Get the hell out of here.
Do you have carrot cake?
Yeah.
What
kind of question is that?
I don't know why I was so shocked, but I mean, it's a reasonable question, I guess.
No, it's just not. Not really. You're not at a diner. You have no idea what kind of desserts you have. Carrot cake, it's like a 1 in 1,000 chance. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, but he has to try, Zara.
If you're at Keen's, if you're at a steakhouse, if you're at some old school place, of course, yes. Do you have carrot cake? You're at some like hip restaurant. Do you have carrot cake? I don't know. No, we don't.
Sarah,
did you get anything else?
I don't remember. I was just like, I was so shocked that he asked me that. I'm still shocked right now.
Me too. I'm also shocked. Sir, behave. Learn some manners. I also love an ice cream cake from Carvel with chocolate crunchies in the middle and that like kind of fluffy, is it like whipped cream? Is it, you know, God knows what it is, frosting?
And we talked about this like probably, I would say, 1 out of every 4 episodes, but I like an ice cream cake with actual cake in it. Like they have
I do too.
Baskin Robbins.
Mm-hmm. That's also very good. Delicious. Love cakes. Love all kinds of cakes, people. There's so many cakes out there. I don't even know where to start or where to stop, but I do like
cake. Oh, I also, I just want to also give a shout out to the what's it called? The Yule log for the Christmas with the little.
Sure, Yule log is nice. That's delicious. There's
a roll, basically just a giant Swiss roll.
My mom was going through old menus from the Love and Oven. Her and my dad's business they had in the 70s, and they used to make amazing cakes and all this like delicious desserts and stuff, and like savory food as well. But my mom was reminding me that she used to make walnut roll, which was kind of like a walnut sponge cake that was just rolled up with fresh whipped cream and covered in powdered sugar. So simple, but so delicious.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really easy to make and really fabulous. My parents made all kinds of great cakes. I like a pound cake too, like a lemon poppy pound cake.
Delicious. Oh yeah, I love a pound cake. I don't really need the poppy seeds in there personally.
I don't need them
either. I love the pound cake that they have at Starbucks. I used to work at Starbucks, and they have like a lemon iced pound cake there. It's really good.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
How amazing. Yes. Well, cake is fabulous, folks, and we can't wait to tell you more about it next week. Same time or maybe a different time. Same place. Different hosts.
Roy Scheider and Liev Schreiber are coming on to impersonate us.
Oh, and Shia LaBeouf. Sorry. Okay. Well, folks, that's it for us today. May you have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And a Happy Super Bowl.
And enjoy the Super Bowl, you fucks. Okay. Love you. Hasta la pasta.
Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.